Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Books and Booze. This is Renee. I'm drinking a Stockyard Oatmeal Stout. We're here with Jeremy Robert Johnson, author of the short story collection We Live Inside You. This week's episode is brought to you by Everwind. You may recall we discussed that series of books on the show not too long ago. And if you click on the banner at the bottom of the page, you will be taken to a wonderful website full of wonderful things. Jeremy, how are you doing and what are you drinking tonight?
I'm doing awesome. And I am drinking an Apocalypse IPA from 10 Barrel Brewing Company out of Bend, Oregon.
See, and I saw that when you posted that picture of your episode notes, and I wanted to know more about it because I'm a big IPA fan.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. I mean, it's made for the general market. It's not as hoppy as like a double or some of the stone stuff. But I have two soft spots. One, it says Apocalypse on it. And two, it is from a brewery that's out of my hometown, which is Bend, Oregon, which is known more for Deschutes Brewery and Bend Brewing Company. But this is one of the new upstarts, a couple of the guys that were brewmasters at Deschutes. I think their backstory is that they had a dive bar running for a while, and then they took the money from that and invested in doing their own kind of fledgling brewery, and it's totally taken off, and it's become pretty huge there. It just got a write-up in the New York Times, and they expanded into Colorado, which I guess is the other place you go to brew. And they've done some outstanding stuff, so I'm just excited that like something good came from my hometown. So, and the marketing, you know, when I saw it just said Apocalypse IPA, I was like, you combined two of my favorite things on one label.
Right.
Sold.
I was hoping you were drinking Evan Williams instead from the picture.
Oh, well, that's the vocal warm-up beverage. That's what I did for the hour before. And then I did, you know, my vocal runs and my, you know, throat practices and my pubam throat singing to make sure I was going to sound right. And I hung out in a vaporizer chamber for a while because a key thing in podcasts, for me at least, is the quality of my speaking voice. So, yeah, that's been done. Now it's more of a beer chaser. It's like a reverse Boilermaker.
Oh, there you go.
Well, we really
I was
going to
say, it's like brewed like 30 minutes away from where I live. So, well, I guess like half the bourbons are. But, yeah, that's awesome. I can't afford it.
Yeah, Evan Williams, I was surprised by it. A friend got that for me. And I usually drink I probably don't pronounce it right, but Bullet, or Bullet, which would be a cooler way to spell it. But, Evan Williams is really smooth. I was surprised by how well it drinks or chugs. I mean, either one is delicious. So,
What are you drinking, Dakota?
Oh, I've been really sick all week, so I got a 24 ounce of Clamata, which is beer and tomato juice. And it tastes like you've been swimming in the ocean with a beer, but you got to drink it anyway because it's spring break and it's not helping at all.
Doesn't Clamata have tomato juice in it too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It tastes like salty pea.
Yeah, it's like an accident.
Tomato.
I think it's going to give me a heart attack. I don't know.
It'll either cure you or kill you.
It could make you stronger.
It could.
I'm not drinking alcohol tonight. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, this podcast is over for me. I've got to go.
I could lie. I'm sorry.
I was told this was just some booze, and I'm hanging out with a bunch of teetotalers.
Sorry.
Hey, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
You know what? Yeah, and Clamato is so disgusting, it kind of makes up for it. So, there you go.
Yeah. There we go. Why don't we do the podcast on Wednesdays? That means we have to drink on Wednesdays and go to work and school on Thursday. This makes no sense. I've been meaning to bring this up.
It was my choice. I said we had to do it on Wednesday, and we do, so fuck you.
Yep.
Next.
Blame Jessica for that. It's inconvenient for me as well. Anyway, we're here. We here to talk about Jeremy Robert Johnson's short story collection, We Live Inside You. We were talking about the artwork and checking out, like, the website of the guy that does the art. You got any input on that to share with our listeners?
No, I mean, nothing other than, you know, I love Alex Pardee's stuff. I think it's outstanding. It's got such a kind of weird, it's got a kind of cartoony dynamic, but there's something about it that's kind of fascinating too, you know, that, that separates it from a lot of, I don't know, kind of predictable horror art, and still it managed to be cartoony and kind of compelling at the same time,
yeah.
In a way that I haven't, you know, seen as frequently before. You know, a lot of times I like more like Baczynski or, you know, the like Hieronymus Bosch and, you know, the old school kind of weird, dark, surreal stuff. And this was one of the first times that I saw something that was had a closer to a cartoon element in it that I still found really compelling and fun. And the first time we found him was for a J. David Osborne book, By the Time We Leave Here, We'll Be Friends, which has a throat parasite that features as a kind of major factor in the story. And then found Alex's art that has this, you know, giant thing emerging from this guy's throat. And we just said, we have to have that. Can we get this guy? You know, he'd been in Juxtapose and he was already working on films and stuff. And he was nice enough to work with us and he's been really cool. And we hope to have more covers from him in the future. So yeah, I just love his stuff. I got a chance to meet him when he was here in Portland and he's super nice and was excited to be involved with the books. And yeah, he makes great stuff. And he does these little vignettes too, of famous horror characters that he does on kind of like postcard size art pieces that are pretty outstanding. And he has one with the 1950s fly meeting the Cronenberg fly that's awesome.
And so I guess my big question is because what I noticed reading through the short stories is that every single one of these stories has a completely different feel, a different kind of theme. You put around some different point of views in each story. Did you write these kind of all at once with the idea of putting them into a short story collection, or are these things that you had been writing over a period of time and then decided to put together in a collection?
Yeah, no, I mean, they weren't so much themed and planned as a batch of stories as they were. It was just, you know, another aggregation of stuff that I'd done and, you know, from different cases where there'd been an invite to a themed anthology, you know, and so I said, oh, okay, I want to try and write that. That's interesting. And or other times where I was just completely obsessed with an idea, which would be most of the parasite stories, and just had to write it and then hoped I could find a place for it to land. So, no, I mean, it was written across a period from probably about 2006 to 2012. Because I'm incredibly slow and I just finally realized, hey, I've got enough stuff here that I think I could make a good book. You know, I could make a book that's not going to have a bunch of spotty patches, throughout. So I finally decided to get something back on the market after being essentially gone for 5 years. So.
Well, and I think the fact that it has all the different voices and different POVs and all that stuff, it makes it something you can read all at once. If I'm reading a short story collection that's just one author, sometimes you get halfway through, and if it's all the same voice, all the same thing, it's kind of like you get bogged down. But this, there was so much, it was really entertaining and fresh to have all the different styles in there.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I have the same experience with collections. You know, you go into them and often, you know, it'll be a whole batch that's all in first person and all kind of has samey elements, or, you know, like George Saunders is a guy who I think works, you know, does outstanding short work, but when he puts all of them together, his kind of passions and obsessions and stylistic, you know, quirks and stuff are so similar that it gets a kind of samey effect as you're going through it. And they just work better as these kind of isolated, you know, pieces. So yeah, I don't know. It definitely wasn't intentional to change it up that much. It just also reflects kind of a changing aesthetic for me as I shifted from doing a lot of the weirder and kind of horror-oriented stuff, and then just what I was reading. You know, I got into reading a lot more crime fiction and, you know, quote, literary, unquote, fiction and all that. So, I delved into some of those things, too, and hopefully, the thing is, it's tough to market. That's the downside of having something, because no matter what, I put two giant monster heads on the cover, so it isn't going to tell you what a lot of the contents are like, so it's tough to find a even footing, and I just have to hope that people, you know, like the writing in general, because it's so all over the place.
So that makes it easier, I think, for me, going back to, like, when you read a short story collection, especially if it's all in the same, if it's all in first person, it's harder to shift gears and get to know your new characters from each story. Like, I've found myself reading short story collections where I'm in the middle of the second story and I have to keep reminding myself that it's actually a different story. These aren't the same characters. And so it's like switching from some of them are in the first person, some of them are in the collective first person, some of them are in second person. And the themes are so wildly different that each story kind of jumps out at the reader no matter how quickly they're reading the book.
Thanks. That was, I guess I got lucky there, you know, and I tried to put them in an order too, you know, and some people say don't do the mixtape approach or whatever, but I 100% did that and went for, you know, contrasting aesthetics and styles and voices and tried to even, you know, because I have certain things I'm obsessed with, obviously the end of the world and parasites and, you know, even certain types of styles and stuff. So I tried to make sure those things were separated enough so it wouldn't be a slog. And what I found with this one in particular is I didn't have as much kind of comedic stuff as I had for my prior collection, Angel Dust Apocalypse. And so it was tough to try and interject some light into the middle and find some stories that didn't involve everyone dying at the end. And I just said, you know, you can only take so many of those in a row. So it was just, you know, I went back and pulled that. I had one kind of trunk story, this old ghost story that I threw in the middle just because I had to have a story where somebody lived, you know. So.
Well, my personal favorite, I think, is a pretty dark one, and it's the, oh, God, here it goes. It's me losing my notes halfway through the show. Hold on. It's the second one in the book about the jogger who realizes that my house really easily as a jogger. That's a great title.
Oh, yeah.
Persistent hunting.
Persistent hunting. I really love that one because it was like a weird mix of things. It's a pretty dark story, but there are some elements of humor in it, and there are some elements of hope a little bit. You know, things get pretty fucked up for the guy, but what I loved about it was I'm going to come out as somebody who hates second person. I hate second person. I have, like, a really visceral reaction. But this one, I was reading it, and I was like, wow, this is exactly what second person should read like. Like, I no longer wonder why it exists because of that story.
Yeah, it was well structured.
Oh, wow. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, the whole conceit, I guess, there was this was a guy who was trying to – he had to – kind of become dissociated from himself just to deal with everything he'd gone through. And in a way, it was his way to retell his story, to put together all the pieces and try and figure out how he ended up where he was, you know? So it wasn't as an arbitrary thing. You know, I can't see the point in going in second person just because it sounds fun or it's an experiment, you know? So hopefully the structural reason for it being there makes it work. But yeah, I've never tried to do something so long in second person before. And I liked it a lot. I can't imagine, you know, I think Bright Lights, Big City is novel length. I don't know of any other novel length second person stories, but it's a difficult form to work in just because it does start to, I always start thinking of Choose Your Own Adventures, that book series from the 80s,
yeah.
You know, because that was all second person and I kept waiting, you know, to type the, do you want to turn into a shark or an eagle, you know, turn to page 56. The whole time that was the specter that was hanging over my head, and I was like, well, I'm not trying to make this like a, you know, experiential kind of thrill ride, you know, I want it to have a purpose, but yeah, I don't know if I could write in second person again. That was pretty taxing to edit, but I think it, luckily it worked there, you know, it was one of those experiments where I kind of got lucky.
Yeah, I think you came across something exactly what you said. Like, he's telling the story, and as the reader, it comes across that he's telling the story like you would in a conversation. And whereas a lot of second person loses that, and it feels like someone's trying to make the story happen to you, where that wasn't really how it came across in Persistence Hunting.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted Dakota, so.
Yeah, I noticed a big part of your style is how you love to play around with language. And that's one of my favorite things. That's what it makes a good author a great author, or separates those two categories. But when you're playing around with language like that, is that something that just happens organically, or do you kind of inject that over the many drafts that you do?
No, I mean, I have that unfortunate condition of stalling out before every sentence, you know, unless I'm really, really locked into a story and in the mode. It's one of those things where before I put in each sentence, I'm pretty much agonizing over the structure and the flow of it, and just kind of the phrasing and how's it going to fit and what kind of effect is it going to have. So it makes for slow going, you know. 5,000 words is going to take me, you know, a couple days. So that's definitely something that I'm conscious, maybe overly self-conscious of going into it each time, you know. And with each type of experiment, you know, there's another story in there, Laws of Virulence, where I wanted to experiment with a document kind of structure. And that was really difficult to try, and I still wanted to maintain these very kind of traditional character arcs, and, you know, have conflict still be present, but try and do that with a form, you know, with a basically like a government document. So I don't know. Sometimes I do those things as an experiment and just cross my fingers. But when I do that, it's laborious, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the story in Nova Parade, the one structured with the government forms. That was a really cool one.
Yeah, that one is that's the one that's in Warmed and Bound. And then there's actually a second person one that's in Nova Parade, which is the Brilliant Idea, which was part of a Symmetrina, which is an even weirder fixed form kind of thing. So I guess I've done a lot of stuff that are kind of gimmicky writing challenges, speaking of NaNoWriMo, just to see if I could, and then ended up getting the results published. So I find that stuff intriguing, you know. It's just like the kind of the Dogma 95 stuff in film, or any time where a stricture is placed, I think it can make for, well, either terrible things or interesting things or outstanding things, but at least compelling, you know, knowing that there's some kind of unique structure to it.
So,
well, if there's any advice I could give to you, it's don't add hot sauce to Clamato because it doesn't make a Bloody Mary and it doesn't taste any.
No.
Okay, so anyway, real quick, for those at home playing the Books and Booze drinking game, that was a mention of Nova Parade, which Dakota and Jessica are also both featured in. Available.
That's out on Kindle now.
.com, out on Kindle now, as a matter of fact. And the proceeds from that are going to go partially to funding Solarside and partially to funding Duotrope, which is a great resource for writers that want to get their work out in the world and maybe get paid for it.
Yes,
this is a quick one. This is a double shot, okay? We're getting close on time. And I know Jessica has the story in We Live Inside You that she wants to talk about, and I have not one, not two, but three listener questions for you tonight, Jeremy.
Okay, speed round. I got this.
All right. So the first question is from Jay Slayton Joslin, and he says, why no new books?
Oh, because I'm slow. I mean, I got a pug, a wife, a kid, a house. I got other people I publish, and I'm slow. So yeah, I mean, tell Jay I'm a fundamentally lazy man, and you know, I enjoy to take time to posture as a writer with periodic releases, and you know, I don't really embrace the art. It's just something to do, and I'm incredibly slow and probably lazy. So you know. I don't know. It takes me a long time.
The second question is directly related, and it's from Eric Bacon on Twitter. I hope that's his real name, I have to say. Okay, he says, ask him about productivity. He seems to disappear for a long time between projects. Huge fan of you both, meaning both Jeremy Robert Johnson and the show. So obviously we have to ask his question on air. So I don't know if you wanted to add to the whole wife and kids lazy thing, but...
Yeah.
Well, but then you're also lazy.
Yeah, I mean, I take a while. And also, I got obsessed with video games for a year. I bought a Wii and Resident Evil 4, and I got obsessed with collecting every possible gun I could because there was supposedly a parasite laser you could get for 1,000,000 gold pieces, and just all kinds of absurd, terrible, terrible reasons that people usually don't admit to have stalled me out as an artist. But luckily, having a son now, my son Caleb was born a couple of years ago, has radically refocused me on getting things out, and that's where We Live Inside You came from, and been putting out more books on the press, and also just getting ready to knock out a novel next year. So, hopefully I speed back up. I go in bursts, I guess.
Well, hopefully that satisfies both Eric Bacon and Jay Slayton Joslin. The next question is from...
Yeah, you guys.
And I posted the picture you sent us of your episode notes on the Books and Booze Facebook page. And she says, ask him if he thinks rum and coke or bourbon and coke is better, and please let that question count as bizarro.
Oh, okay. Bourbon y Coca-Cola es muy superioso. Es que de derecho de la de top. Seca, lejos, y algo más, abajo, arriba, en frente y encima. I would say a couple of rima. Which I believe. Oh, and also, por supuesto, yo soy los fantasmas de los ojos con mijos, which I'm pretty sure is gibberish.
The last part was with children.
That's what I was going to say. I know with children.
All right. Well, we got that out of the way at least. Jessica, the story you want to talk about, which smoking. I don't know if I smoke while I smoke because I'm weird about that. So
you're so weird. One of the stories that I really enjoyed in there was Gravity of Benham Falls, right?
Yeah.
Because it was kind of a creepy, well, it's definitely creepy, but it was a fresh spin sort of on the haunted by the dead sibling sort of thing. And I know in your notes in the back, it said, what was it? It had like a really pornographic scene in it, and you ended up cutting that out.
Oh yeah, I had to. It was brutal. I went to this camp called Ghost at the Coast when I was taking a bunch of different writing classes out of Eugene, Oregon, and it was with this it was at like a Boy Scout camp, and the majority of the people participating were like elderly women, and I have no idea why, but I just decided, I was going to write a kind of more transgressive twist on the ghost story and include this big pornographic scene right in the middle. And I found out once we got done at past the editing phase that after we all cooked the communal dinner, we were going to sit around by candlelight and read the stories. And I ended up reading that story to a bunch of women who could have been my grandmother. And I guess it was a big controversy the next morning before I woke up to come into the pancake, kind of whether or not it was technically pornographic and, should there be restrictions on future participants and all that. And that was why I cut it because it didn't work. It was what I call a shin knocker. When you're walking in the dark and everything's going smoothly and then you smack your shin on something, it popped me out of the story as a reader. Because I think it was forced. It was one of the things you do when you're gunning for edgy instead of just telling the story. And Yeah, I don't think it was even well written. I think I used a lot of like pornographic terms and stuff. You know, it was probably on some 50 Shades.
Members.
No, I swore I would never use Throbbing Member or, you know, Purple Helmeted Scepter or any of the phrases I used to find in, like, you know, my babysitter romance books when I flipped through them to find the good parts. So none of that. But it was still, I think I dropped the C-bomb in there, and it was rough, and it was better having cut it. So
if you're confused at home listening, the C-bomb is cunt, because we're
there you go. Oh man.
Oh,
that's a gorgeous word. It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
My husband is British, and I don't know if
you're that's different.
Yeah, it's totally accepted swear word. And he told me one day that it would change his life if I would let him use cunt freely without being offended. And so from that day, because I love my husband, it's just a thing now. Just a thing.
Yeah, no, it's partially it's the dialect and all that. I think I saw an interview with Matt Damon, and he said that it's his favorite word in the British dialect, and it's his least favorite word in the American dialect. It just depends on the usage and pronunciation and all that, and you know, because you have a tendency to use it in a much
say it.
Right. It's a lot more angry and German sounding, and less like a kind of kinship or just knocking somebody, you know.
Right.
That's the first mention of Matt Damon on our show. I don't know if that calls for celebration or not.
There you go.
This is only a good movie. Yeah.
Anyway, again, getting close to time, and so we're going to listen to some music, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about NaNoWriMo.
Vá lá, fala comigo, conversa, desconversa. Tenho uma plantação de cerejas, por isso não tenho pressa. Hoje eu decidi pôr o mundo em câmara lenta, fechar um pouco as cores desta película cinzenta. Conta-me lá a tua filosofia de vida. Deves ter uma, porque hoje sem isso não há saída. Eu não tenho nenhuma, mas é mesmo por opção. Escolhi viver da bruma, definido na indefinição. Pode parecer destrutivo, mas não é produtivo. Assim não sigo nenhuma teoria de nenhum livro. Mas não confundas isto com outros estatutos. Isto não é tipo carpe diem no wi-fi dos putos. Não é que eu seja um gajo muito profundo. Não tenho teorias perfeitas para salvar este mundo. No fundo, apenas sou uma fraca desculpa para a pessoa. Eu sou um pássaro parvo que, apesar de saber, não voa.
You enjoyed that song? We're going to talk a little bit about NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, which I'm currently failing at right now, by the way.
I thought you weren't going to tell him that.
I wasn't, but you know what? I'm honest. I might pull it out by the end of the month.
Didn't you win last year?
I have
did.
Accomplished the 50,000 word goal every time I have attempted it. And this is actually the least busy November I've ever had since starting NaNoWriMo. And it's the November that I'm failing the worst in the first week. So anyway.
Why is it Remo and not Rhymo?
I guess it is Rhymo. I think maybe I just say it wrong. I'm having a Dakota moment, maybe.
Oh. Well,
have you been reading?
I've never heard
What's
it
that?
Out loud.
I've never heard
have
it out
you
loud.
Been, have you been reading a novel?
I have
reading
been reading
a novel.
Several novels, actually.
Yeah.
So I suppose it counts. Maybe that's what I'm doing.
Mm.
I'm having National Novel Reading Month. I'm going to read 50,000 words this month.
Yes, I'm doing NaNoWriMo.
I could do that. Yeah, I'm in.
So, because here's the thing. There's a lot of mixed. You're what?
I don't understand any of it. I'm reading these Sigmund Freud books, and I'm just not comprehending any of his sentences. It might as well be Russian to me, yeah.
Is it?
Remo.
Is it Russian? It could be.
It might be.
What I was going to say, though, is that you get a lot of mixed attitudes about NaNoWriMo. A lot of people don't like it. Because obviously, if you write 50,000 words in 30 days, you're going to have to edit the shit out of it. But on the flip side, we're just reading an article. We, being the Books and Booze crew, we're just reading an article in the Huffington Post where they were talking about some of the authors who've had a huge success with books that started as NaNoWriMo novels. So, RIMO, yeah, whatever. Anyway, you've got Water for Elephants, which was a huge seller when it came out.
I didn't know that was a NaNoWriMo thing, because when I read, like, I read that book, and when I read the, like, the notes at the end or whatever, she talks about, like, she did so much research for that up front, and so for some reason I didn't realize it was a thing.
Well, these NaNoWriMo's rules, well, and they're very flexible, as a veteran of NaNoWriMo, rules are very flexible, and they do encourage people to start outlining beforehand, and they also encourage people to write the novel that they've been meaning to write. So she did do a lot of research up front, and she chose to do it as a NaNoWriMo book. And then I think this is not necessarily from the interview in the Huffington Post. There was another interview I read with her where she was saying that after NaNoWriMo, she spent another year revising, doing additional research, and fixing it. So, again, it's not a, like, it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. You're not going to write a 50,000-word novel and submit it to your to an agent on December 1st.
You might, if you've got
you, well, it wouldn't be a good idea, but...
I'm just saying, you could.
I have a feeling that there's a lot more Kindle books uploaded within 3 to 5 days after the end of NaNoWriMo.
Yeah.
Well, last
I
year...
So.
I don't know if everyone is that discerning about the editing process. Some people might just be like, I did it, post it.
Done. Upload.
Gate space. Yeah, he's been 6 months. And I was like, 6 months? Are you fucking kidding me? Which I didn't use them because I have pride. Anyway. What, now, Jeremy, this is my question for you. You mentioned it earlier, and you talked about experimenting with writing. And one of the big things they promote NaNoWriMo as being is a chance for writers to let go, just write whatever comes to mind, try and make a story out of it, experiment and be free and just get the output. And so when you talk about experimenting with your writing, is it more of a free write thing, or is it something that you do sit down and plan before you start playing with those experiments?
It just depends on the approach to it. I find that, you know, the more research I do in advance, usually the richer something ends up being, you know, whether it's, you know, kind of in the background of the story that's going to help it. It's going to add the extra kind of detail that makes it feel true. But at the same time, if you were going for a more purely kind of emotional thrust, I could see somebody just saying, oh man, I've got a lot of things in my mind and I've got to find a way to get it out. And here's an opportunity to apply this kind of, you know, group pressure to just get the work done, to just flex my writing muscles and stay on top of it and really keep it going. And I've read some stuff about people's, kind of their creative alpha state they get into with their, you know, their brainwaves and all that it actually improves mm-hmm. when they're in periods where they're just really staying attentive to, you know, producing a lot of work. And of course you can go back in and edit that, you know, whatever ends up being egregious. But the people usually find a lot of their best work is when they're in that kind of alpha state where they're almost, you know, I'm not going to say channeling because that sounds kind of pretentious, but when they're, just really being free with it, just, you know, instead of being so restrictive on every single sentence, just going, you know, in the mode.
Right.
So, I don't know. And there's a lot of, Stephen Graham Jones has been open about a couple of his novels being written within, you know, like 2 to 5 week periods. Chuck Palahniuk had some insanely successful novels that he wrote very quickly. There's precedent for that. Carlton Mellick, you know, has owned up or actually advocates for writing a novel in a 3-day period without sleeping, you know, and then just, of course, going back and editing and doing all that work. But, you know, he's got 37 or 40 some books to his name. And it's almost because of that kind of hyper work ethic where, you know, you really just get in there, lock yourself into a room and type. And I know a lot of people do that for the ends of their novels, too. I think I remember Craig Clevenger talking about, you know, just getting a hotel for the last week and saying, here we go, and a coffee pot and, you know, calling it good. So I think there's something to be said for it. I can see how some people would say, oh, but I've been laboring at every sentence of this novel for, you know, 5 or 6 years. But I think that is potentially a way to kill a work, too, you know, to overwork every single aspect of it and take away whatever emotional thrust to add when you wrote it. So I think it's fine to, you know, that people could definitely produce some great novels out of an entire month's work, as long as they do stop and edit it, and then if the whole novel isn't there, you know, take their time to make sure it gets there. But as a practice, it's always something I've wanted to do, but, you know, then not, like so many things. So,
well, I think it's for two kinds of people. I think it's for, you know, the person who really wants to write and hasn't been able to get over that emotional, mental thing of, like, can I do it? You know, I think that for people who maybe didn't have, there's a lot of people who aren't open about the fact that they write. They don't share their writing with people, but they want to make something of it, and they have a real, like, almost paranoia about sitting down and doing it. And I think Nana Rima's fantastic if you're in that state of mind. And then the first year I did it, I was in that state of mind. I had written a lot, but I had not submitted anything. I had not published anything. I really didn't show my writing to people. I said, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to do it. Because one of the most freeing bits of writing advice I'd ever read or heard in my entire life was Ernest Hemingway saying, all first drafts are shit. You know, it's not going to be perfect. And I think NaNoWriMo is good for that. And I think NaNoWriMo is also good for people who are honest with how much they are able to put out in what time period, because it makes you work on your time management. Some people can do 1,000 words, 2,000 words in a couple hours. So for them, NaNoWriMo is nothing. You know, other people have to set aside like an hour in the morning, an hour on their lunch break, an hour after the kids go to bed. You know, I think it's good for that, for getting in the habit, for getting in that, like you said, in that creative mind space where if you're doing it every day and you're doing it a lot, it's easier and you're tapped into those portions of your brain that make it work for you.
I think you have to rev that part up. You know, I think that's something Joe Lansdale talks about a lot, is having the discipline to just stay on top of it, and that, you know, writers write. It's a physical act, you know. It's a lonely one, but it's what, you know, separates writers from, you know, dilettantes. So,
yeah. Right, because there's a lot of hobby writers, and there's nothing wrong with doing that, but...
No. There's a lot of ham and eggers, though, too. I mean, there's a lot of straight-up grinders. You got your James Pattersons and, you know, the people that you get the sense it's closer to, well, I'm going to sound elitist here, but it's more like typing. It's like a typing process, you know. It's like using a lot of film stock and then at the end calling it a movie, you know. It has similar elements to a movie. You know, so I can certainly see some people saying that's probably where the perception of it being a careless act comes from, you know, people writing that fast, just because there are people who just, you know, pound out product and dilute the quality of the novel. That's my provocative statement for the night there. I'm good. I always have to make one.
Again, it's about being honest with yourself, because some people be totally happy pounding out formulaic novels or, you know, pounding out the next 50 Shades of Grey. Some people want something more than that from their writing, and so it depends on how much time are you going to put into editing and fixing this thing once November's over, I guess.
Yeah, I wanted to do Nano, but Jessica roped me into doing War, so.
I'm doing both, which is probably why I'm failing at Nano.
I didn't ask you to do that.
Well, you're a good promoter.
I'm just saying. I don't blame me for your shit.
Oh,
Josh.
Never mind.
So War is the battle over at Lit Reactor?
It is, yeah.
This is going to be a busy month.
Be a busy month for that.
Yeah. I'm going to win.
Crazy writing going on.
Well, it's kind of like Nano. I mean, you have to read a bunch of stories and then write a story every week, so it's kind of like, sort of like it.
And when you combine that with us reading about a novel a week, it's like we're getting an MFA in the month of November. For free.
And without one at the end.
Yeah, that's free. Come on.
Yeah.
Free.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We were focusing on the part where it was free. In the intrinsic rewards. Intrinsic rewards are important. With that, we are damn close to being out of time.
Yeah.
So, Jeremy Robert Johnson, we live inside you. That's the book we were talking about.
Good, because at first that sentence sounded like a kind of weird threat.
Everwin is our sponsor for this week's episode. You can click the banner that will be on the webpage within the episode. And we'll link up some stuff about NaNoWriMo and, yes, and whatever music I decide to play on this episode will also link up. I forgot to do that, so we didn't. I don't have anything to say about the music right now.
We could do like an a cappella thing.
I'm going to sing.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'll do. I have a really good. I was told not to do any funny accents, but I have a. You know, Michael McDonald from the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what he sounds like. This is super. This is probably the most authentic. It's going to be eerie for you. You're going to think, "Is that Michael McDonald?" And it's not going to be. It's going to be me. But just hold on a second. Here we go. See. Creepy, right?
Oh,
eerie.
God.
I'm opening the show with that, by the way. I hope you understand.
I don't know if I got the lyrics right. I feel like I'm close on the lyrics, but I'm 100% authentic on the soul. Yeah. And part of me goes, that part I find the most touching.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jeremy Robert Johnson doing the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, Jeremy, I wanted to ask you something, but we kind of ran out of time. I wanted to ask you about the Chuck Palahniuk cover blurb. How did you end up landing that one? Well, you actually had a lot of big names in there.
I just get lucky.
Person, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, just a standard way. I just, you know, I find people whose writing I totally love, and I write some really earnest letters, and I ask if they'll take a look at what I do, and sometimes I get crazy lucky. So, yeah, I mean, that was a game changer, you know, as far as bringing people around for a debut especially. So that was huge, and Chuck's pretty much the world's nicest guy. So, yeah, I mean, both he and Dallas, Jack Ketchum, have been just really supportive, and having them backing the work has been awesome. Totally awesome. So, those guys are, to a huge degree. So,
with that, everybody playing the drinking game, finish your drinks, kick back, listen to whatever song I'm going to play, have a great week, and come back next week for Nick Corpin.
Não falo com ninguém. Chefe, vens de nuvem, mas bonita-se bem. Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta. Levo o melhor fato e porto-me na festa. Há um século que não falo com ninguém. Chefe, vens de nuvem, mas bonita-se bem. Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta. Levo o melhor fato e porto-me na festa. Meu mega é que mega, tão famigerado. Mas fiz estar meio gelado e complexado. Alismado, gênio, chapar, janado. Por defeito, congénito, inacabado. Faltam-me diversas peças, por isso não me peças. Atitudes crescidas e coisas dessas. Esta gente me detesta, esta gorja não presta. Se tivesse uma corda, enforcava-me na festa. Sou a espécie de um apocalipse que me preste. Ao primeiro dia da primária já estava em xeque. Ainda vou matar o dread que me roubou a bicicleta. Corridas adivinha em que lugar cruzava a meta. 14 do 2 é cartas, mas não interessa. A minha cena não é essa. A tua tanga, quando és puto e levas tanga. O mal é gigante, em adulto viras monstro e não desafas da panca. Há um século que não falo com ninguém. Chefe com esta nuvem, mas bonita-se bem. Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta. Levo o melhor fato e porto-me na festa. Há um século que não falo com ninguém. Chefe com esta nuvem, mas bonita-se bem. Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta. Levo o melhor fato e porto-me na festa. Este complexo não é inédito, como é dito, tem crédito por querer matar o pai. Mas eu só quero matar um prédio, quero um remédio para assassinar.
assassinar o tédio causado por este cimento e esta carne com hálito de ferro. Não faz-me um obsequio. Eu bem sei que sou periférico, então deixa-me orbitar do ar e continuar sem mérito. É que estes olhos não são bons para fazer planos. É que nem consigo distinguir entre os zombies e os humanos. E com estas pernas nunca vou subir na carreira. No máximo apanho a carreira como rotina a vida inteira. Por isso quando a TV pergunta quem quer ser milionário, eu paro, levanto o braço e faço figura de otário. Não tenho jeito para negócio e só no ócio sou ágil. Por isso juntei-me uns choques para fazer dinheiro fácil. O meu parceiro monstro hábil, feito de Playmobil, submarinos destruidores com carinhos na caixa. Rasgar batidas com frases imperfeitas até o mundo respeitar as nossas caras feias. Há um século que não falo com ninguém.
Projeto com esta nuvem, mas por mim dá-se bem.
Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta.
Levo o melhor fato e porto-me na festa.
Há um século que não falo com ninguém.
Projeto com esta nuvem, mas por mim dá-se bem.
Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta.
Levo o melhor fato e porto-me na festa.
Este complexo não é Daddy Po.
Não é Daddy Po.
Querem trancar o médico por não querer matar o pai. E só querer matar o prédio. Este complexo não é Daddy Po. Querem trancar no médico por não querer matar o pai. E só querer matar o prédio. Este complexo não é Daddy Po. Querem trancar no médico por não querer matar o pai. E só querer matar o prédio.
Há um século que não falo com ninguém.
Exceto com esta nuvem, mas por mim dá-se bem.
Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta.
Levo o melhor fato e forto-me na festa.
Há um século que não falo com ninguém.
Exceto com esta nuvem, mas por mim dá-se bem.
Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta.
Levo o melhor fato e forto-me na festa.
Há um século que não falo com ninguém.
Exceto com esta nuvem, mas por mim dá-se bem.
Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta.
Levo o melhor fato e forto-me na festa.
Há um século que não falo com ninguém.
Exceto com esta nuvem, mas por mim dá-se bem.
Hoje deixo a terra, acho que é desta.
Levo o melhor fato e forco-me na festa.